Om sahana vatatu, sahana punaktu, saha viryam karavavahai, tejasvina vatitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. Ahika mushnika vrata, ahika mushnika vrata, siddhyai mukteshcha siddhye, siddhyai mukteshcha siddhye, bahukrityam parasya bhut. Bahukrityam parasya bhut, tatsarvam adhunakritam, tatsarvam adhunakritam. Ahika, amushmika, vrata, siddhyai, one compound. Muktehe cha siddhaye, bahukrityam pura asya, abhut tat sarvam aduna kritam. Remember the previous verse in this section. Now we're going into the tripti. What is the nirankusha tripti, the limitless unfettered fullness or satisfaction that is enjoyed by the jivanmukta? There was these seven avastas. We did the Shoka Moksha, the sixth one, which is the liberation from sorrow. The seventh Avesta, or state of experience, is this unfettered tripti, unfettered satisfaction. So now this next segment, he's talking about this tripti, this satisfaction. And so in the previous verse, 252, he stated that the satisfaction or the ananda, the happiness that's born of vishya's sense objects, which is what we all, in how we gain our happiness, is through the fulfillment of desires. Right? So that type of tripti, that type of satisfaction is sankusha. It's limited. Right? It's limited by the replacement of another desire, for one thing, in the Bhasha they said, which is a great way to understand the limitation. You know, another desire will come in and knock off that desire. Let alone that desire itself being infringed upon by others who don't want you to enjoy the fruits of that particular desire. There's so many things that will limit, right? That will limit the ongoing state of satisfaction. If that state of satisfaction is born of a vishya, any type of object, anything within duality. Vishya actually stands for anything that exists within duality. So all of those things are limited. He says, but this, iyam triptihi, this tripti, this satisfaction is nirankusha. It's without any type of fetters. It's totally free. It's limitless in nature. It's not bound by time. It's not bound by change. Nothing can be done to it. So this tripti is unfettered. And then he said, this tripti expresses itself like this. A person will say, kritam krityam, that which was to be done by me, that has been done. Kritam krityam. Praptam prapaniyam. That which was to be achieved by me, that has been achieved. That's the state of the jivanmukta. That's the tripti that a jivanmukta, the satisfaction that a jivanmukta enjoys. What was to be done has been done. What was to be attained has been attained. Meaning, everything is well with me, and I don't have to worry about losing it. It's been achieved not to be unachieved. It's been achieved not to be lost. It's been gained not to be undone. Right? It's what I had to accomplish, that has been accomplished. So it's called kritam krityam. Swamiji says this all the time, kritam krityam, because it's a definition for the jivanmukta. What is to be done by me, that has been done. Praptam prapaniyam, what is to be achieved by me, that has been achieved. So he says, iti eva tripyati, thus, it's like this, in this way the person is satisfied, in this way indeed, eva. So now with this verse, he's going on to say what the before and after is. So he says, Ahika amushmika vrata siddhyai muktehecha siddhye bahukritjam pura asya abhut. What he says is, before bahukritjam, for that person, for the Jivanmukta, before he became a Jivanmukta, asya, for him, abhut, there was bahukritjam, there was much to be done. Bahu means much. Kritjam, to be done. So before gaining liberation for that person, there was a lot of stuff that had to be done. There was much to be done, literally. Then he says, for what? Well, for obtaining siddhi, for the accomplishment, for the gain of a whole host of things. Vrata means a whole group of things, here and in the hereafter. Ahika means here itself. And amushmika means in the next life, in the next world. So all of the dharma, for instance, and all of my charity, all of my giving, all of the just following the rules of dharma, and all of the rituals that I do as a Vaidika, all of the rituals that I do, all of these are to protect and to support my gaining a good next birth and then experience in the heaven worlds, so that I'm going to be able to have happiness, have tripti there in the next life. And then what to speak of all of the things that I need to do here in this life as a samsari to satisfy myself, to gain the things that I need to gain to meet my requirements for being happy. It goes on and on and on. In a positive way, the things that I have to gain, in a negative way, the things that I have to get rid of. It's a real balancing act, and it is endless. So this is the state of samsara. So as a samsara, he's saying, there were so many things that had to be done continually to protect my ananda, my tripti, in for this here, in this world, and in the next. And then he says, not only that, there was so much that had to be done to accomplish my liberation. Muktehe siddhye, just to gain liberation. Right? You have to come to class. You have to practice karma yoga. You have to work on yourself. All of these, it goes on and on and on. All of these things that you have to create, you have to be able to manage to be in the right situation. You know, it's a lifetime pursuit in a sense. Your whole life, everything that you do, even in terms of karma yoga, how you are in the world. All of it is what I need to do, even in order to have the antakarana shuddhi, the dharma, the peace of mind, the shanti. You know, that allows me really to gain this knowledge and to hold this knowledge. So there's that whole thing. And then all of the problems with having to get to class and get myself into a situation where I can have a sadhu-like life. Sadhu-like life, I don't mean being a renunciate, but I mean having the space in your life to be able to devote yourself, you know, to gaining this knowledge. There's a lot of stuff that has to be handled just to be able to do that. To get to class, you have to get in. You have to have a car, that works. It goes on, So he says, there's just so much for us yet for that one who is before knowledge. You know, so much, so many things have to be done. He says, but then he says, tat sarvam aduna kritam. All of that is done now. So he says so simply. Aduna means now. So tat that. Aduna, he goes, tat sarvam, that all, tat sarvam, aduna, now, kritam is done. All of that's been done now. Now I don't need to do anything to become full. Right? Because, see, this is the thing. As a samsari, there's so much to do, it's for vishya ananda. I need to do this to become happy, I need to do this to become happy. There's so much I have to do. It's endless. Then you realize you become a mumukshu. And then you realize this, none of this works. It doesn't work. It'll give me, you know, momentary happiness. It won't solve the problem. So now I have all this other stuff I have to do in order to become liberated. In the end, you only need knowledge, right? But knowledge isn't about doing. Knowledge is about knowing. But then you have to get yourself into a position where that knowledge can take place. You know, like if I want to see something, I can gain knowledge through my eyes. I want to see something. Well, I have to get myself in the place where that object is that I want to see, like that. So if there's shravana needs to take place, I have to get myself into a position where shravana can take place. So there's a lot of stuff that I have to do in order to get myself into a position where I can actually gain this knowledge. Right? So that's what he says. This, you know, there's a lot to be done. But now, he says, all that is done. Because once a person has knowledge, then you are full. It's not about doing anymore. Your ananda is not, you are liberated. So that doing is taken care of. Right? Getting yourself into the proper position so that you can gain knowledge. You've done what you need to do to gain antakarana shuddhi, all of that. The knowledge has taken place. You recognize yourself. And that self nobody can take away from you. No object has ever given you that ananda in the first place. That was all mithya. That was all an illusion. Now you're not subject to that illusion anymore. And what is the distance between yourself and your mind? The self is the ananda, in fact. What is the difference, distance between the self and the mind? The same distance that there is between the pot and the clay. There is no distance. The self that you are, the self that you are, the self that is the self of the mind, right? The very self of the mind, the very clay of the pot, that self is the self that is free. The problem, the dukkha, the sorrow, the searching, the seeking, the grief, the agony, all of these things, all of these experiences, these are mental experiences. They're experiences that are brought about by the way we relate to the world. The way we relate to the world in terms of our ananda, what we need to make us happy. And of course that's very, very layered and complex. What the mind has believes it needs to be happy is multi-layered and complex, and it takes a while to unwind all of that. But in reality, every moment of ananda that the mind has ever experienced, right, is brought about by its own moment of relaxation. It has nothing to do with the objects. It has nothing to do with the universe. It has to do with its own moment of relaxation, so it in fact is not competing, it's not creating pain that is drawing your attention away from the ananda, which is your own swarupa. The very simple swarupa ananda of your own being. The relaxed mind will give you moments of different shades of bliss. Different shades of bliss. Those shades of bliss come and go. Those are all kind of nice pullas. They're nice little candies. They're like candies. You know, candies of enjoyment. All of these little pieces, moments of bliss that are really brought about by the relaxation of the mind, which is now reflects the ananda of the self. But the ananda of the self, you know, is not a candy. It's not a candy. It's something which is absolutely still and stable and whole. That's why I said in the meditation, when we do the meditation, one of the best ways to understand meditation, when we're sitting in meditation, consciously relaxing the body, consciously relaxing the mind, speaking to the unconscious. All of these things that we do really are just to totally relax the body and mind so that its affects are not in physical pain, for instance, emotional, mental pain in the mind, are for the moment not competing with just me, with my own nature. Because we're used to, the mind is used to following after physical pain or emotional pain. That's where we're used to paying our attention, you know. And so, and rightly so, it hurts. So if you can put yourself in a situation where for the moment that is just relaxed, you bring in the inner friend, there's no critical voice there, There's somebody that it's, you're in a safe haven. So the body and mind just simply relax, and you notice the nature of me, this me. And it's this very simple presence of me that is never covered in any way. It doesn't matter if you have an ananda vritti, a blissful vritti, a happy vritti, a compassionate vritti, all of these different vrittis that we have, or you have the negative vritti, negative vrittis, jealous vrittis, angry vrittis, hateful vrittis, all of the worst vrittis, most painful, irritating vrittis, thoughts, vrittis mean thoughts. All of those are not hiding and are taking place in my presence, the presence of me. And it is this me that is the beloved. Whether Rumi or all of the poets, even the Christian poets, the Sufi poets, always use or using the word the beloved. The Christians, the Sufis, even the Buddhists, the Hindus, they all sing praises to this beloved. It is this one, this very simple me, and it is you. It just needs to be recognized. It's never away from any experience you have. And so when one discovers that, then it's over. Because this is all I seek. I am, in fact, all I seek, have ever sought. And you are so simple. Your being is so obvious and so simple that it makes it hard to recognize. It's too simple, it's too present, and it's too dear to you. It's so dear to you that you totally identify it, in fact, with your body. That's why you're afraid of death. You know, you don't want to die because your body, you won't be there. It means you think you won't be there because you're identified with your body. The beloved body won't be there. That's the beloved. The beloved body won't be there. The beloved me won't be there. It is that, that beloved is what you need to recognize. That beloved is Brahman. You say the beloved body, this body won't be there, so I won't be there. And so what good is it? What good is liberation if I won't be there? That's how beloved the I is. And it is that I that you realize is Brahman. Not any other I. It is that I that is most dear to you. That is Brahman. When that is recognized, then it's over. It's over because no one can take that from you. There's no. It is you. Nobody can take it from you. It can't come and go. You can't take it from you. And so then you say, kritam krit, you know, that kritam kritam. That, those words become absolutely real, you know. And so that's why he says here, now, you know, all day I work so hard, first as a samsari, I work so hard to get all of these things that I needed. And then for moksha, I worked and worked and worked. And, oh, finally. Now I see. Now all that's behind me. Now that's all done. It's done. So now he says, Tade tad kritikrityatvam, pratyogi purasaram, anusandhatadevayam, evam tripyati nityashaha, tat etat krita krityatvam pratyogi purasaram anusandadat eva ayam evam tripyati nityashaha. So now he says that state of having done krita krityatvam tat etat, that this, and for the Sanskrit people, that this we've been talking about is often used. That what we've been talking about is this. So that this state of having done what is to be done, And Pratyayogi Purasaram, and, you know, the opposite that preceded it, that opposite condition of not having done everything that is to be done, that opposite condition that has preceded it, Purasaram, Anusantadat, you know, contemplating over this, thinking about it, the mind thinking about all of this, Eva, ayam evam, he says, this person, you know, thinking over all of this, you know, the state of having done everything that is to be done, and then thinking about the opposite condition beforehand, he says, this person in this manner, tripyati nityashaha, goes on, nityashaha means in every way, always. Nitya means always, so nityashaha. He goes on thinking about all of these. This is his satisfaction, you know. His mind revels in the fact of it. The mind revels in the fact of your own freedom. That's one of the ways the mind. You are free. What he's saying is that you are the ananda. You are the self. And so the self that you are is the constant. That's the me, the ahankara, the I notion. Now, it's not really an ahankara anymore. It's an I notion. That's the I that properly labels you. Yourself is Brahman. That's aparoksha for you, your being. But then the mind really enjoys that. You know, it enjoys the stability of it. It enjoys the peace of it. It enjoys the fact that there's nothing more to do, that you don't need to protect it. If the self, which is free from time, free from change, it doesn't need to be protected. It's not away from you. It is you. And so there's nothing to do. There's nothing to do about it. Nobody can do anything about it. You can't do anything about it. It's you. So that's kritya-kritya, that state of absolute freedom, and that the mind enjoys that freedom, you know? And it recognizes also, what it had been through to get it, if it's just kind of, you know, thinking over things. They use an example in one of the books I read of, say, if a person goes on a long trek and they've been trekking for days and days and days, and finally, you know, they reach their destination. Now they're there. And so they sit there and they just enjoy being there. And then they think about all they went through to get there. You know, that's an example that can be used. So here, for the jnani, you know, it's just what the mind can be reveling about these things, about your own, the freedom that you are. You know, it's not the freedom that you have. It's the freedom that you are. You are free. And nobody can do anything about it, including you. That's a great freedom. Because we tend to blow it, you know. We're doing our best, but it's never good enough. You know? You try to be a better person, and do this better, and do that better, and all of these things that we would, you know, like to live up to and like to be. It's endless. But the Atma is not endless. It doesn't require endless improvement. It's not a question of we can make the Atma better. We can make the Atma into a better person, but that is really samsara. What if that's your liberation, is to find out, well, the Atma, you can still do a little bit more. Because it's still within duality, so we can polish it a little bit more, you know. But the Atma is not, the self is not like that. You can't, it's free from time, it's free from duality, there's nothing to be done. It is what it is, you can't make it better, nor is there anything about you or about the creation that can even conceive of improving upon it. That's the nature of the self. That's the nature of reality. Your mind, once you recognize yourself, there is no way to improve upon it. You can't say, well, gee, if it had just been like this. I wish that reality were just, if it had only been like this, that would have been better. You can't conceive of it. You can't conceive of it because it's infinite ananda. And by infinite ananda, I don't mean these bliss states. I mean the infinite ananda, the belovedness of your being that is fully manifest, fully experiential at this very moment. Nothing is covering it over. Other than you're taking it for granted. It's not being covered over. It's not like there's a bag over it, or that there's some state you have to get to in order to recognize it. It's not that. It's that it is taken for granted and not recognized for what it is. And so that's what needs to be, what we need to discern. That's what the viveka is all about, because it's there to be discerned. If you can think, I think it's a good example to think of how much, you know, you love your life, you love your body, and in the sense that when you think about going to heaven, for instance, I used to not be excited about that at all. Because I wouldn't go, some soul would go, who cares? You know? Now, if you would tell me, you're the one that's going to go, then I would think, you mean my body is going to ascend? Because I didn't even like the idea. If you say, I am going to go, that means the whole package. The body, mind, sense organs, that's what makes me, me. And if you say, that is going to go, how? Am I going to ascend or what? That's how much the identification is. That's how thorough the Dehatma Buddhi is, the taking the Atma, your being, what is you're attached to be this. What the Upanishad is saying, what you recognize, when you gain knowledge, what you recognize is the one that you're attached to that makes you you is free. Is Brahman, is free from time. What makes you you, the you that you love, the you that is beloved, the you that you want to last, that is exactly the only thing that will last. Everything else is mithya, is anitya. But what makes you you, that makes that you take to be you now, but you've stuck the body on it and the mind and the sense organs, you think they're what's doing it, what's making you you. You recognize that no, what makes me me is free from time. And that is the moksha. Nothing can be done, nothing can be done about it. So now... Vidyarandi is just, I can just see this guy, you know, he's because he's a great jnani, he considers a great jnani. He's thinking, okay, he's writing this book, and he's thinking, okay, how do I revel in my knowledge? How do I revel in my freedom? And so he just lets himself revel, and he's writing it all down, all these things down. So now he's really going to go at it. Because
he's going to revel?
Dukkhi no. Dukkhi no jnasam sarantu. Dukkhi no jnasam sarantu. Kamam putra japekshaya. Kamam putra japekshaya. Paramananda purnoham. Paramananda purnoham. Samsarami kimichaya. Samsarami kimichaya. Dukkhi naha agnyaha. Samsarantu kamam putra adi apekshaya. Param ananda purnoham samsarami kim ichya. He goes, let the dukkhis, the ones who have sorrow, let the dukkhis who are agnyahas, who don't have self-knowledge, they're either ignorant, they're suffering, they have dukkha. Anybody who doesn't have self-knowledge is a dukkhi, is suffering. Because there's no such thing as your happiness not coming to an end, and so therefore every happiness is just a setup for suffering. Right? Unless you can say, oh, I can happily be unhappy. But otherwise, you're a dukkhi, because you're full of sorrow, because every happy moment that you have comes to an end, and every time that happens is sorrow. So for the dukkhi, who's an ignorant, let samsarantu, let them wander around. Samsara, you know, samsara means let them move about. Let them, you know, go move about as they do in this world of constant change. Mm. Let them move about. Kamam as they wish. As kamam here means it's an indeclinable. Kama being used as an indeclinable. Let them move around as they desire. Putra adi apekshaya, with their desires for sons, etc. Putra, sons, etc. Sons, wealth, family. all of the different things that a human being desires, let them just move around, go for it. Let them go for it, go forth. Samsara can mean let them go forth as they desire, as their heart moves them, with their desires for sons, etc. But then he says, Padma Ananda Puranoham, I, on the other hand, so aham I, who am Padma Ananda Purnaha, who am full, who am Padma Ananda, I am Padma Ananda. I am Supreme Ananda, Purna, completely full. Samsarami, I would wonder, why would I wander about? Desiring what? Kim Ichiya. With what desire? With what? Desiring for what would I be wandering about like that? In other words, I don't have anywhere to go. I don't have a desire to become happy. There's no desire pulling me that I have to go do this so that I can be happy. So really for Jnani, your desire is your prarabdha. The prarabdha karma that caused you to take this birth, that is your desire. That's what's pulling you. Right? It's the unfoldment of the prarabdha. And so that's Ishwara actually. For the Jnani, there's not a stress between Ishwara and Jiva, because the Jiva is full, right? You've got this body, mind, sense organs as long as the prarabdha lasts. And so there's instead of the jiva srishti, jiva's projection upon the Ishwara srishti, there's Ishwara srishti, and that is your desire. It's the prarabdha living itself out. So he says, why should I do anything? I'm here. That's enough. I am here. And this is my prarabdha. So what is there else for me to do other than being here? I am already full, so there's nowhere else for me to go. Really, just Ishwara Srishti without Jiva Srishti. You know, the Jiva Srishti is just the projection. Srishti means creation. The Jiva's creation is Jiva's projection upon reality, upon Ishwara. That's what creates so much pain. You know, because as long as our projection is there, then Ishwara just goes on as Ishwara is. But if our projection doesn't match what Ishwara is, then there's going to be all of this, you know, tension, you know, as I'm trying to fight with Ishwara. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. And so every time I'm having to let go, and then I feel relief. You're forced to let go every time. It's not that Ishwara is going to say, oh, let me stop for a minute. Let me stop. This little jiva wants it to be this way. Doesn't even realize that. It's so much of a projection that it's not something that can be noticed. It's like the snake on the rope. You know, in Pratibhasika means the jiva's projection upon what is actually there. It's hard to take it seriously. You know, like we give the story, now I'm giving the story of the snake on the rope on a different level. Two kids are walking along and one child sees a snake. Their life at that moment is only about that snake. There is no snake. There is no snake. And so his friend tells him, you know, there's no snake. Ha ha, there's no snake. You know? Nobody takes the snake seriously. Not even the boy when he sees that nobody takes the snake seriously. So I can imagine with Bhagawan, you know, the creation is going on. It is your life. It's that your life is part and parcel of Ishwara. It's not separate from Ishwara. It's going on. There's no problem. Everything is going on fine. It's the Ishwara Srishti. No problem. It's just going on. What's the matter with you? What's wrong? This is all going on as it's supposed to. You know? But we're saying, no, it should be like this, it should be like that, it should be like that. It's very interesting when you start thinking like that. So he's kind of reveling in that. So now, I'll do one more. Anitishtantu karmani. Anitishtantu karmani. Paralok. Paraloka iyasavaha, paraloka iyasavaha, sarvalokatmaka kasmat, sarvalokatmaka kasmat, anutishtamikim katam. He says, anutishtantu karamani paraloka iyasavaha, sarva loka atmakaha kasmat. Anutishtami kim katam. He says, let those who want to go to another loka, paraloka yiyasavaha, those who have a desire to go to a heaven world, paraloka means another world, like a heaven world, let those ones who want to go to heaven, a heaven world, anutishtantu karma, let them perform karmas, all the rituals and all the things that you need to perform, all the things that you need to do to be able to get, like, to Swarga Loka, let those people who want to go to another Loka, let them do all of that. He says, but Sarva Loka Atmakaha Anatishtami, he says, I, who am the self of all of those Lokas, I am the Atma, I am the self of all of those Lokas, what can I do? What could I possibly do, and for what, and how? How can I do anything? What would I do, and for what reason would I do anything? Because I am the self of all of those lokas that people are seeking to go to. Right? It's like the graham crackers. You know, there is nowhere to go that you aren't already there. You're the self of the whole. And so that's why, you know, I keep thinking, you know, how nice those tapes are, those discussions we had with Swamiji, how nice they are, because in one of those, he does say what you need to do, and if we were talking about this at the last class, this is the reality. This is the truth. I am the self. I am the whole. But you have beginningless lifetimes of taking yourself to be a jiva. You have beginningless lifetimes of seeing the snake over and over and over and over and over again. And so the mind is always by habit reaching out. You know, it's like the prince who is the, you know, the prince who was was kidnapped and raised as a little urchin. Little beggar, you know, when he's finally retrieved and found, then he's now retrained to be a prince. But he spent all those years as a little urchin, you know. And so he sees somebody giving away laddus, and his little hand goes out, I want the laddu, you know, because of habit, your hand goes out all the time. And so whenever your hand goes out and says, you know, I need this, or I want to have this so that I can be happy. You know, at that time, your mind needs nididhyasana. That's the moment that you contemplate. What is the contemplation? It's just bringing your knowledge to the forefront. That's all it is. Bringing your mind back to what you know. You know? And then you enjoy, and you just do it. It takes an instant. But that's what you do. You just bring your mind back, and then you be present to Ishwara. You present to Ishwara means present to the prarabdha karma, to the situation at hand. This is my life at the moment. This is Ishwara at the moment. And this is the life that I'm engaged in. This is the life where Swamiji says, you know, every moment I just do my best. I do my best with what's right before me. There's so many things right before you that needs to be done. I need to do this, I need to do that. These things are there to be done. There's nothing you can do. You can't sit and say, no, I don't need to do any of it. The whole creation is engaging you in all of these things that needs to be done that are part of your prarabdha. Yeah. So you're busy. You know, even if you're a sannyasi, living up in Rishikesh, in the Himalayas, in your little hut, you are still busy. You know, you still have to take your shower, you have to get food to eat, you have to keep your place clean, You have to deal with the people that come your way. It is still life. You have mosquitoes, you have all of it. The whole life is still there as long as you have this body. You know, there's life there to be engaged in wherever you are, whoever you are. And so what Swamiji will say, just let this be it. What you've got it all right here. This is Ishvara. Forget the Jiva Srishti. Just be with this fully and completely. This is your prarabdha fully and completely here. Do the best you can with it. Enjoy your own ananda. You know, and as your mind goes out and wants this and wants that, so that you can be happy, I need it to be this way. You can want to improve this, want to improve that. That's how we live. You know, I want to improve my house. I want need to vacuum it. That has nothing to do. That's not the problem. The problem is where, when you're on, your well-being is at stake. Rather than objectively being with your situation, your well-being becomes at stake. You know? Whereas we try to help. You know, and Swamiji says, I just do the best I can every moment. He's also said it in another way. I try to help. You know, I try to help the best that I do what I can. Because he's always been asked to help all the time. But so we all are. You do the best you can, that's it. But that's objective. You know, you live your life as fully as possible. That's objective. Do what's there to be done. Objective. Enjoying Ishvara. Enjoying the complete person that you are. So, let's stop there. Purnamidam, Purnamidam, Purnat, Purnamidachate, Purnasya, Purnamadaya, Purnameva, Vashishate, Om Shanti, 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 Hari Om Shri Gurupyo Namaha, Hari Om.
When you have desires and needs, and the need for security and, you know, retirement, all that stuff, do you see that as Ishvara or your Prarabdha, a portion of Ishvara? How do you play that out?
Well, the Prarabdha takes you from birth to death, right? And so that doesn't mean that you don't do the best that you can in a given situation. Mm-hmm. Like, say, you need to save money for retirement. These are just kind of practical things. But there's also a recognition of Ishvara in all of that, so that this kartritvam, this doership, where the whole thing is on your shoulders,
yeah,
you know, lightens up. that's what you have to do. Is to
you mean like he's going to save me?
With his great...
yeah, like a golden man comes down.
And he'll pull you up and drop you off on the shore.
I deserve to be saved.
You know, that's kind of the thing, like, my fear is kind of like, okay, but, you know, suppose I have to go somewhere where I don't have satsang and I don't have teaching and I don't, you know, like...
It's all catastrophic thinking.
Yeah. Well, I feel like I need it, you know. Yeah. I'm like, I need this.
Then you have to trust in Ishwara that you'll get what you need. You know what they do in India? No, I don't think remember they do this now. They used to do it. They used to make their disciples, say they'd have their sishas, you know, the guru would have a sisha, say up in Rishikesh in the Himalayas. He said, all right, you just walk down to, don't take anything with you. You just walk down to Madras and back. When you get back in a few years, then I'll teach you. So, because, you know, then you see that it's, that I can do that. It's just between me and Ishwara, you know.
But you say to increase that trust, that's kind of big.
Well.
Or you wish you could increase the trust, but you know.
Sometimes you have to test it. I remember, you know, of course this was in the 60s, but. I remember I did that when I was still in junior high school, not junior college. I was in junior college. And I was kind of a mumukshu, you know, like all of us. And I really wanted to know whether or not Bhagawan was really there. For me, it was just God, if there was some God there. But say, I really wanted to know whether Bhagawan was there. And one day I just decided to test it, and without taking anything, I walked down to Mexico and back. Yeah, that was the 60s. I was what? I must have been 20.
Where'd you start up?
In Santa Rosa, near Santa Rosa.
Wow.
But your parents know you did that. What'd you tell me you were doing?
I didn't. I wasn't living with them.
Oh.
I was in college. Yeah. And I ended up getting down to Mexico right at the border there. And I ended up walking along this dirt road. I walked on this dirt road for miles, and I actually ended up at this little ashram that only this one woman was running. And I stayed at this little ashram there for 2 or 3 days. She was very nice. She just took care of me. I guess I don't really have a lot of memories of that. And then it was maybe 2 days, and then I walked back. I left and I walked back.
And you had nothing with you whatsoever?
Did you
not
get
anything.
Ride?
Mm-hmm.
Did you
hitchhiked. And then, I hitchhiked. We had a couple of strange encounters, but I survived. Nothing happened.
I used to do a lot of hitchhiking.
Yeah.
Seattle to Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Florida.
You learn a lot doing that.
You learn a lot.
One thing you learn is if you are out there in the road and you are resentful of the people who don't pick you up.
Yeah.
That doesn't work at all.
Yeah.
I do a little test with Bob. I'd say, all right, if you're really there, I need a ride, but the third car has to stop and give me a ride.
Oh, brother.
Yeah. I used to play these games, you know, because the reason I was going was there was a test.
Yeah.
Did that work?
Actually, it did work. It did work. It did work. There were some synchronicities there. It was one of those times, you know, where it's now or never. You know, it was very interesting. So I was gone. I must have been gone, I don't know, about a week or so.
It took you only a week to do it?
I don't remember.
So that was
convincing. Well, I was thinking, say how long would it be getting down there? Because it was from Santa Rosa all the way down to the tip.
To the tip of Baja or to...
Yeah, way down at the tip of California.
That takes 3 days.
California.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's probably I just don't remember now, but maybe 7, 8 days. I don't know how long it was. There wasn't anything in between though, except that few days at that ashram and then the hitchhiking back and forth.
You just.
I mean, I guess that's kind of where the test or tension is. You know, I guess for me is like in preferences. You know, it's like what I want.
Yeah, what you think you want.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I want.
Yeah, well, that's true. You know, I mean, I've had some real blows too. It's like you really do want something, and Bhagavan says, no. Shocking. I mean, if you ever had something that you really want, and you really work for it, and you really, really, really try over and over again, because you can't believe that you're being denied this, but that you are denied it. There's not a thing you can do. I've had that happen to me. Shocking. But in hindsight, I'm glad. I'm glad those things didn't happen. But it's very shocking at the time because you try so hard and it's just a door slammed in your face. And I had a hard time with that. But then, I think it's a good experience also. To have an absolute no when you really feel like you can make something work. You really believe that you can do something and try and try and try and you cannot.
Why do you think that's good?
Because it's the truth. You aren't the one that always decides. You know? Well, sometimes, you know, you can be... There's a lot of different levels to it. There's the punya papa. They say that, you know, this is 50% punya, 50% papa on this loka. So you will be having sorrows. And sorrows means you're not getting your way. That's what it amounts to. When you really have a sorrow, a big sorrow, things did not go the way that you wanted them to. Creates a lot of grief. You know, if the same horrible thing could have happened, but maybe that's what you wanted to happen, then you'd be happy. Right? So, I mean, there are things in life, I think everybody gets, you know, a few big ones. A few big things that are very hard. And then you get some big pleasurable things too. And then a lot of little ones. You know, little sorrows and little joys. I mean, situationally, you know.
Where does free will come in?
Free will is it's, you have that muscle to make decisions, but it's always going to be to make decisions, to make choices, but it's always going to be intertwined with your prarabdha. You can't have free will apart from the prarabdha. And so it's moving within the prarabdha. An example they use is, like if you're swimming downstream, that stream and the edges of it and the current is your prarabdha, right? The stream, it's got banks. So that's your prarabdha and it's going in this direction. And you're swimming along. You can swim this way and this way. You can even turn around and try to swim backwards. But your prarabdha is not going to cooperate. If you're going this way, it'll cooperate, but it's a little edgy. If you go this way, it'll cooperate, a little edgy. If you go this way, everything's great, right? Because your free will isn't, it's going in harmony with your prarabdha. You know, but so within, you can look at it within the movement of your prarabdha, there's choice. You know, and there's that choice has repercussions also. You know, that's where you collect your punya and your papa. That's where you have your shanti or you don't. You know, by how you are with the prarabdha. So if you're resisting the prarabdha, say you look over here at Mr. the Joneses over on the other side, their stream. You decide you want that stream. You want to be like them. Well, your stream isn't like their stream, you know. And so then that's very frustrating. So everybody's got their own little interconnecting streams.
Have you heard of Mr. Jones? You know who she's talking about?
Some people may
have a gay man.
Yeah,
the gay man.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's so sad because, you know, it's such a unique opportunity. You do have this body, your prarabdha, it is yours. It's very precious, actually, to have your body to have your life. It's very, very precious. But problem is that we look over at everybody else's and forget about what we have. Because we're not happy. When you have knowledge, that's different. You found the source of the ananda, and then you can really kind of revel in your own prarabdha. Even though it's going to continue to have difficulties, it's not like life is meant to be easy. Life on this loka, this is not heaven. This isn't Swargaloka. This is 50-50. There's a lot of difficult things, challenges in this life. And the thing is, we can learn from them, grow from them, use them for, you know, as sadhana. Because they're going to be there. They have to be your sadhana for your own nishta. Otherwise, they're just pain-producing. Difficult situations are meant to produce pain. If you're a samsari, then they'll just do that for you. Or you use, as a samsari, you use them to grow, to become stronger, to have more of a commitment to dharma, to have more of your value system, have more attachment to dharma, adharma, than you do to pleasure. You know, that's how you grow and mature as a person. But then as a sannyasi, as a mumukshu, someone who wants knowledge, then all of these dukkhas become like a sadhana. Because my ananda doesn't have anything to do with them anyway. You know, but they're meant to cause pain to this particular jiva, to this prarabdha. They're not pleasurable. Those are we all have them. There's all of these events, situations that were not, they were designed to not make you happy. Mm. They're designed that way. You know? And so, in order to be objective toward those, that which is very, very possible, because in reality, your ananda has nothing to do with them. It has only to do with your own being, your mind's nishta, that's all. You know, so you can be with those situations, deal with them, be objective, and do the best you can with them, and your ananda is not at stake. That's a sadhana. Unless it's not. If it's not sadhana, that's just natural to you. It's something that you're just handling. You're not asking the universe to be Swargaloka, to be heaven, a heaven world. In the heaven world, everything you want, you get as you want it. No problem.
But you know what happens in heaven world? There's still teaching going on there, and there's still some of those angels show up for teaching.
They do.
Yeah. So they have something that's wrong there, you know?
No, they get everything they want, and they also have viveka. So they want to know, so they get that too. That's the highest loka. Mm-hmm. Hard to get there. Somebody says, don't try.
Don't even
do
try.
Do it here. All is well.
And to do all the rituals, it costs a lot of money, you know?
A lot of money, a lot of time.
And you have to have the right attitude all the time, and you're not going to make it.
Don't waste your time to do this. Get your knowledge now.
But apparently they see that things are time bound, or that they know they're going to leave, and
they must know that in Swargaloka you will stay as long as the kalpa. Means the manifestation of the creation, which is cyclical, you'll stay till the end of the kalpa. But when that's gone, then your time there is over.
Well, the thing is, listening to Vedanta, at least for me, it's so pleasurable. So that's probably just why up there, wherever such a place would be. I mean, it's pleasant.
Well, I saw this mural, and on the mural, it was in Swargaloka. And there were all the students sitting in front of the... Who they must have been...
Brahmaji or something.
Brahmaji, you know. Oh. And they were all studying and listening, having shravana.
You saw this in India or something?
Yeah, oh. one of the caves. Yeah. Mm. it was very striking.
Where's Tibby?
Yeah.
And I think that's one misunderstanding that people have. I certainly had that for a really long time, that you know, self-knowledge or enlightenment or whatever you want to call it, that sort of instantaneously means that the creation somehow starts treating you differently.
This person's special.
But wouldn't it be true that if you resist it less, that you're more likely to have a positive outcome? Or if not?
No, I think that's true, because for you it's much more positive, because you're not making it into the miserable situation, even though it still can be a difficult situation. But not so much for you, because you're not suffering. It's still a hard situation. Now, I've seen Swamiji handle so many very, very difficult situations, but he's not suffering handling them, but that doesn't mean it's not a difficult situation. You know? And it's full of problems that have to be handled, that kind of thing. Illness, you know, all those kind of things that are not easy.
Okay, I'm going to tell my cheesy story.
Okay.
That happened to me recently. And as some of you know, my elderly mother, who has Alzheimer's, and isn't doing very well, and by golly, she wanted to stay at home. For many years, she's wanted to stay at home. And she recently fell and broke her hip. So the question was, she was in a skilled nursing facility. And the people there who recommended that she go to a place to be cared for, in other words, move out of her home. And I just knew, and this was going to be, we had an appointment set up, and we were going to double team her and talk to my mother, because I knew this was going to be a big deal for her, you know. And she was going to be totally against it and totally resistant. So it was like, I was dreading it so much. And I knew for days and days that it was coming, you know. Mm-hmm. And I just go, what is she going to do? There's going to be lawyers. There's going to, it's just. And so I went to have lunch just before the appointment. I could barely eat. And I went into the bathroom, and I had myself really worked up into this tizzy about this, you know. And I went into the bathroom, and to use a ladies' room. And there on the wall was a 3x5, like almost like a postcard, but it was this painting. And it was like of the redwoods, you know, up in the redwoods, and it was a road. And it was redwood trees, and you got this road, and this bend in the road, and the redwood trees, and the light coming through. And I just stood there, I'm zipping at my pants, going, I'm at the blind curve. I'm at the bend in the road, that I don't know what is around. Oh, this is a jiva at the bend in the road. Okay. And after that, it really was okay,
yeah.
You know.
That's
great. And I know it sounds so ridiculous, but it was so meaningful to me at the time, because it brought in, it was kaushalam and just kind of bringing in the knowledge. And I suppose my mind did it, but it did it with this 3x5 postcard in the ladies' room. So I think it's sometimes the bend in the road is really terrifying. And I know that. But I think if you consider the position of where you are, it's somehow more comforting, you know? So
that's a good story.
Especially because art played a part.
Yeah.
Where's that bathroom now?
Yeah. It's the ladies' room.
Oh, ladies' room. I can't go there.
Maybe their message isn't an empty. It's
no matter where you go, there you are.
You know, another thing I think that brings relief is to remember that it is your prarabdha, not somebody else's prarabdha. So as your prarabdha moves, it is you. You're not just this body. You are the prarabdha. The jiva's prarabdha is the whole situation. And so there's a peace, P-E-A-C-E. There's a peace that comes with the unfoldment of your parabdha, even though, as you say, bend in the road, you are so afraid.
The blind curve.
Yeah, the blind curve. Yeah, you don't know what's going to happen to you. But the prarabdha is your prarabdha. And so it suits you.
Yeah.
It's your dress. It suits you.
Yeah.
We don't always
like the fashion.
Yeah, it doesn't seem worn, but it's still scary.
Yeah, yeah.
Scary.
Yeah, it's your punya papa, not somebody else's.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And,
But if you are having a frightened thought at that point, do you make any effort to try to control it, or?
It's nice to bring your knowledge. If you have knowledge, it's nice to bring your knowledge in. Or you just have that. Sometimes it's the frightened child inside also, the Swami in you, or the more mature part of you can say, you know, don't worry. We can handle it, whatever it is. It'll be all right. Or whatever you can say. If you can't bring your knowledge in, you can. It depends on what needs to be brought in, but you can bring in some form of wisdom to help.
Because in the meditation you were talking about not resisting whatever thoughts came up, so I'm looking for
I see what you mean. When you're doing like what we're doing in the meditation, see, if you have a fearful thought, that thought is tense. That's what's creating the affect, fearful affect. It's hard to do it, but if you can actually just say, okay, let me have that thought. Let me just relax. Relax into that thought. You'll find that the thought loses its fearfulness because you accept it. You're not pushing it away. And so as you relax it, what happens is that the ananda, which is your own swarupa, becomes more predominant in the thought. So a lot of what causes the pain and agony is our fighting the thought. So when you just let the thoughts be, they become something like scenery. Even fearful ones, you don't want that to happen. But there's a difference between a thought that you don't about something you don't want to happen, that is a relaxed thought, and a thought like that that is full of angst.
Mm.
So by relaxing, what you're doing is dissipating the pain. The more you relax, the more you dissipate the pain.
You know what Tomiji's been doing lately? And I never quite get this, but apparently when people write him questions about fear, I guess a lot of people have a tremendous amount of fear or something. And then he'll make, like if it's an audience, I've seen this many times, he'll say, okay, now everybody say this with me together. Say this. And he has everybody say it. I welcome fear. I am not afraid of fear.
Yeah.
And I guess...
It's the same idea.
It's very powerful.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
You're not pushing away the fear. Whatever it is, you're not pushing it. Even, you know, some of the hardest ones, fear and shame.
Mm-hmm.
Fear, shame, humiliation. These are very difficult emotions. But if you say, if you feel some shame... To be able to just say, okay, to welcome it, let me just feel this. Let me just totally accept this and be with it and don't push it away at all. It's an incredible relief. All the emotions are like that. To welcome them, say, I'm not afraid to feel this, you're welcome to be here. Just let it and let yourself totally relax in that emotion and it will dissipate. The problem of it, the painful part of it will go away. And then actually you get so that you're not afraid of those feelings and they don't cause you problems anymore. You have to try it.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah, no,
I'm
It'll be an experiment.
I'll try that. I'm a little old to walk to Mexico, but...
Yeah, that was safer then, too, you know?
Yeah.
60s were a lot different than now. That's for sure.
No, that's fine. I'll see if I can. Because it's like a balance. You're not resisting, and yet you're trying to bring the knowledge in at the same time. So
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. You're not resisting, and then the knowledge is brought in by kind of the inner friend, the buddhi, you know, the one who has knowledge. But you also, sometimes before you bring your knowledge in, you have to kind of be with the part that's hurting on the level that they're hurting in order to relax that part. And then you can, you know, bring yourself back to your knowledge, to Ishwara too.
Kind of in relation to helping other person, like a friend of mine is going to get, you know, biopsy, and she's so scared, she's had cancer already, and, you know, I want to help her, but...
Sometimes just being a friend, just being present. You can't really...
do too much.
Well, in terms of Vedanta or something, she would have to want that. She would have to want that knowledge, you know? Mm. Otherwise, it's just laying a religious trip on her.
Mm-hmm. She's a practicing Buddhist for many, many years, so she has a framework for
yeah.
Yeah, but she immediately jumps to the negative. It's going to be bad. She can't hold herself back from putting that there at the moment. So I guess what you're saying is just be there with her, wherever it is she needs to go.
I don't know. I would have to know her. Mm. But I would just be with her, and if she's going into deep catastrophic thinking, sometimes you can say something that looks at it in another way, called reframe it, you know? Reframe it, see it differently. You know, maybe it won't be as bad as you think.
Yeah, try to visualize it differently.
Yeah.
Or being okay with wherever she is communicates a lot.
Yeah.
Safety.
Yeah. So. That's the first step. Yeah. Because if that's not there, then there's no empathy, there's no...
just preaching.
Yeah, there's nobody with you.
Mm-hmm. Right, and it's not me that's waiting for the answer.
That's really nice though, to help the doctor, because I was thinking the other day about, you know, like medical stuff and everything, and how like my attitude is very different now about that sort of thing. You know,